So I'd like to call this December 6, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8:03. Roll call. Ms. Becker, would you call roll?
Thank you. Dr. Mastores?
Present.
Dr. Cohen? Noted absent. Dr. Carpenter?
Present.
Dr. Brown?
Present.
Public member Diva Galan?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, thank you. Public member Sammy Hamed? Is he on here? Okay, noted absent. And board president, Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Board staff, Director Whelan?
Present.
Licensing Administrator Fawn Becker and Assistant Attorney General Mona Baskin.
Present. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam President, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Agenda item C, Board Purpose, Statement of Purpose. A license to practice optometry in the state is a privilege granted by the Arizona Legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item D, declaration of conflicts of interest, if any, for this meeting. I have a conflict with Michael Martin.
And this is Dr. Mastores. I have three conflicts. Dr. Usmotherly, Dr. Gong, and Dr. Grimes.
Okay. Any other conflicts? Okay. Agenda item E, President's Report. I have no report for this meeting. Agenda item F, Review, Discussion, and Possible Action on Investigative Reviews Complaints. I'm going to start with these a little bit out of order just because of our conflicts of interest. So I'm going to begin with number two, Kayla Osmotherly Doherty, IR number 202509. Is Dr. Osmotherly present? Or Dr. Doherty, I think I see you there.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. And I think Megan Gailey is counsel, correct?
Correct. Morning, President.
Thank you. And patient MG, are you present? Okay.
Good morning. Yes, oh, I am.
There you are. Okay, good.
This is Dr. Mastores. I'm going to recuse myself and go on mute.
Thank you, Dr. Mastores. So could I have a board summary, please, for Kayla Osmotherly, IR number 202509?
This is Dr. Brown. My summary would be that, from my understanding of the complaint, that that patient MG's psychiatric care is being cared for at Midwestern University, that he's filed a charge of discrimination with the Attorney General's office, and has brought a complaint against Dr. Osmotherly Doherty, even though she has never treated him at the clinic. That's my brief summary.
Dr. Brown, would patient MG like to make comments addressed towards the board?
Yes, I would. Good morning. I would just like to first start by thanking this opportunity to this board. It's been just asinine and absurd that anyone in this country is under persecution for making legitimate government complaints. And there's been a pattern of retaliatory abuse and behavior by administration at Midwestern University. I was a patient of record, and I do have some written prepared remarks, so I'll try and be very brief. Making those government complaints is something that anyone can enjoy when they've been abused. Specifically, on December 18th, after making some government complaints against her colleagues and others to the Arizona Board of Psychology and to DES and others, I received two letters, and very concerning, indicating that the veterinarian companion animal clinic and the comprehensive care clinic, both clinics I never was a patient of, but I was told by Dr. Zadig to utilize the comprehensive care clinic for counseling outpatient services. I'm very concerned because this individual, I believe, has been in a position of authority and management of clinics. In the letterhead, it was an all clinic dismissal, and that is her title, VP of clinics. I've engaged with her on telephone back in April and then in midsummer about her boss's behavior, which she told me she was very well aware of. And then she makes these false allegations. And I'm concerned that my PHI and HIPAA rights were violated for making legitimate government complaints. And like what was mentioned by your doctor, there was and still is an Attorney General civil rights investigation, which will be reviewed by their chief counsel at the Attorney General's office. I've had to utilize government agencies to get my grandfather's remains back after getting these nasty letters accusing me of baseless accusations without any due process. And I've had to use short-term counseling services, which I'm now not in any counseling or have any access to that or a referral. Dr. Jesse Dominguez and Dr. Adam Blacker, both who are certified by the state of Arizona optometry, in my 10 years at the Eye Institute, I want to make this very clear, never once had a problem with me. The individual never came on a call or came to ask how I was doing for my patient care, either at the Eye Institute or any other institute. But I am asking that this board conduct a thorough investigation, and if others are involved, if appropriate, to be considered for criminal referral. My understanding is that some of these agencies are in fact governed by state statute, that if the alleged reporter or victim is, and I'll quote the statute, any adverse action taken is considered criminal. ARS 46454. But this is not something that, as a patient, you should be dragged through the mud and then have their patient rights and healthcare rights aborted and terminated simply for making legitimate government concerns and complaints when the people in charge of position at a clinic, a healthcare institution, want to just bully you. So Arizona deserves better than some healthcare provider terminating care, tampering with medical records, all in an effort to keep a company's image and a boss's reputation that seem to just be more concerned than a patient. I know Dr. Adam Blacker signed my prescription, and I have a copy of that from a few years ago. But as by state law, a physician has to sign a prescription RX form to use. Unfortunately, the letter in December was not signed. I just am very concerned that there's been a disregard for healthcare principles and undermined the healthcare institution and profession. I've been in fear for my safety for months because of this institution and individuals that knew about the abuse. There's a reason, if I may just mention, that the Attorney General's office and other state agencies governed by state statute have been investigating for months on end. And I want to make this very clear to this board that at no time did any state agency tell me that it is illegal to go to a state agency. In fact, the Attorney General's chief deputy, who's a former judge, said, "Your Christian ethics have been just above great things. It's time to utilize our services and see what we can do for you." So, I think that it's imperative everyone here be deserving of treated with respect and dignity and certainly due process, and not just be singled out for their religion or for sending chocolate in an email to a student therapist. Whatever baseless things are thrown or emails that were never told in a patient bill of rights, there's just numerous concerns that are had here. That's why, again, the state agencies have come and investigated for months on end. So thank you and appreciate your time.
Excuse me, Madam President, before you continue, I'd like the record to reflect that public member, Mr. Sami Hamed, has joined the meeting at 8:11 a.m.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to invite Dr. Doherty at this time to address the board if she has a response.
Madam President, may I go before Dr. Osmotherly?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Very briefly, I just want to thank Dr. Brown for his summary of this particular case. Based on the patient's or MG's complaints, there's a lot of information contained that I have some concerns about discussing in the public forum, mainly because of the nature and extent of my practice areas. But briefly, as Dr. Brown summarized, this does not arise out of the provision of optometric care. It instead appears to arise out of Dr. Osmotherly's administrative role at the university in which she has been in for many years. In this particular case, Dr. Osmotherly acted reasonably and prudently in her capacity as an administrator at the university. It is also worth noting that none of the optometric care has been called into question by MG. And in looking at this and going through the provisions of the Practice Act, nothing that was alleged in MG's complaint rises to the level of unprofessional conduct, and nothing that Dr. Osmotherly did is a violation of the act. Based on that, we would ask that this matter be dismissed. Dr. Osmotherly is here, and I would like her to address some of the comments within the parameters, taking into account the sensitivity of some of the allegations contained within this particular complaint. And I will defer to her to address a couple of additional areas. Thank you for your time this morning.
And Dr. Osmotherly.
Thank you all. And I appreciate the time in front of the board. I agree with the patient. We always appreciate the opportunities of this board and other institutions to allow patients to address any concerns. We take that very seriously, both at Midwestern University in my own personal practice. As the patient has stated, I have never been in any direct patient relationship with him. He had a concern with a clinic outside of the optometry clinic. He has alleged some complaints in that area, which have been addressed, although, you know, perhaps we can all agree not to his satisfaction in the way that those were addressed. He is no longer a patient at Midwestern University. And again, I would just reiterate, he has not ever been a patient of mine. There have been no HIPAA violations. I have never accessed his medical record or viewed his medical record in the patient psychology area. Those are protected and we have strict restrictions around those. So I appreciate the consideration and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Osmotherly. So this will conclude open discussion and I'm going to open this up now for the board's discussion. If we have any questions for you, we'll ask you directly. Board members, any comments here?
This is Dr. Carpenter. Yeah, I would just say that the role of the board is to look at the patient care, make sure the Optometric Care Act has not been violated. And it sounds like MG has already been pursuing other avenues available to him, including the Attorney General Office. And I don't see that this is really, it really isn't the position of the board to make a ruling one way or the other, since we're more focused on optometric care. And I would just encourage him to continue to pursue those other avenues that are available to him.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Dr. Brown, any comments?
I agree with what's been said and don't find any violation of the Optometric Act.
I'll also say for my part, this is outside the purview of the Arizona State Board of Optometry, as the patient has not been a patient of Dr. Osmotherly. I'd invite comments from Ms. Galan. Any thoughts?
Sorry, having trouble with the mute button. Yeah, I don't have any further thoughts on it. I agree. I think it's kind of outside our purview. And that's kind of where I would leave it.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
Yeah, I have to agree with all that's been said as well, Madam President. But also, this is not the venue for such issues that he's bringing up, actually. And considering that the person in question here is not the one that treated him at all whatsoever. So I don't see a violation of the Optometric Act.
Thank you. So just in reassurance to patient MG, other avenues may be better to pursue, but this board does not review the administrative role of Dr. Osmotherly, just that of a practitioner. And as you were never a patient of hers, it's outside our purview. I'll just state that again for the record. Would anyone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Brown. I move that we dismiss the complaint as it does not violate the Optometric Act.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Sorry. Either way, I'll second it or you can.
I'll just take that as a second, Ms. Galan. Okay. So we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Osmotherly. Any further discussion from the board members? Okay, so we'll have a vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. I'm going to move forward to agenda item number 6, Alita Gong, IR number 202510. This is also because Dr. Mastoris has a conflict of interest here. Is there counsel present for Dr. Gong? Is patient DS present? Okay, I hear nothing.
DS is present. They just need to unmute.
Okay. I see your patient DS. Would you just confirm with me, take your mute button off and confirm that this is you? Okay, I'm going to move on. Maybe DS doesn't want to address the board. And then Dr. Gong, are you present? Okay, I'm going to assume no. Can I have a board summary in this complaint?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I could offer a board summary.
Thank you.
So complaint number 202510. Patient DS had an eye exam the office of Dr. Alita Gong back on October 9th. The stated concern is that the refraction was done by a student. I did go over the exam. It looks like the exam was done very thoroughly. I also read Dr. Gong's response of how she works with the interns and supervises. And I didn't get any clarification or if there's any frustration by the patient, whether or not anything was done improperly. But anyhow, that's the summary.
Thank you. Patient DS, this is your opportunity if you'd like to address the board regarding this complaint. Okay, I hear no response. And Dr. Gong is not present, so then I will open this up for board discussion. Thoughts from the board members?
This is Dr. Brown. It seems that the, from my reading of it, that the main concern is that the student performed the exam. A couple things that I noted was that the patient has declined cataract surgery and so has decreased vision, but after picking up the glasses, there was no complaint, and that the patient signed a policy allowing a no charge recheck within 60 days, which was not apparently acted upon. So I too am not completely, I guess the complaint is that a student performed the exam, but I'm not finding anything that rises to an offense against the Optometric Act.
Thank you. Other comments? Dr. Carpenter?
Yeah, so kind of the same thing. What I should have said is during my review, yeah, I didn't really see any negative outcomes. So I don't think there's any, I didn't see any concern about the care that was actually given, just the mention that it was a student that performed the exam. But I feel like it was all well, the way it was handled and done and the way Dr. Gong explained her procedure of working with the interns and then following up on their care and making sure that the patient care is being met. I did not see any violations of the Practice Act.
Dr. Carpenter, I'll also state for the record, this is usually how it is done with a student preceptor. The student will see the patient first with permission from the patient, and then the preceptor will supervise the care. The student usually leaves the room, goes in, relays all of the information from the exam to the supervising doctor. They review it, come into the room, and look through, also, you know, sort of repeat exam, check the patient, and talk to the patient, release the patient, sign the form. So this looks like standard operating procedure to me. I didn't detect anything that had been done inappropriately, and it was done by all accounts with the patient's permission. So no violation of the Optometric Practice Act that I could see here. Can I also get comments? Ms. Galan, any concerns?
I don't see any violations either in this case, and that's where I'm at.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, comments?
Madam President, I echo those comments as well. I don't see a violation, and I know the patient in this DS in this situation was not happy about it being an intern, but as long as they were supervised accordingly, there's nothing wrong with it. There's the only way people get their experience by internships and supervision, and that's the way it goes in a lot of fields, not just here, but I don't see a violation whatsoever.
Thank you. I'll also state for the record for patient DS is think you can decline the student at any time during that exam, before, during, and don't have to proceed with that. So for future reference. Any other comments from the board members here? Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll make a motion that we dismiss this case as it does not show any violations of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Dr. Brown, I second.
Thank you. So we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the case, the complaint against Dr. Gong, as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Any further discussion? Okay, so we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item F7, Amy Grimes, IR number 202511. Is patient DB present? I see your face, patient DB, but I can't hear your voice. It could be that your microphone is not working. Nope, we can't hear you.
Excuse me, Madam President. Mr. DB, you can log off and come back in and see if that resolves the issue. So when you come in, you can test your microphone before logging in, or you can always call one of the phone numbers that are on your letter and log in with the passcode.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a little bit of time to work on this from your end, okay? All right. Respondent Dr. Amy Grimes present? Okay, no. All right, can I have a board summary, please?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I could do the summary.
Thank you.
So for complaint 202511, DB versus Amy Grimes, this was, this is a VA facility, if I remember correctly. And on July 10th, 2024, the patient presented with a tint waiver from ADOT, meaning due to light sensitivity, requesting that they be able to tint their windows darker than the normally allowed limits. Patient was frustrated by initially being told that the VA will not fill out forms that are from outside the VA. And then the story seemed to kind of change over time as they went back trying to get some answers. Ultimately being told that, or being pointed out that an ophthalmologist is the one that needs to be able to sign that form. Dr. Grimes, from her point, stated that she oversees a lot of students, a lot of doctors, didn't necessarily recall being there, being the one that spoke to the request of having that form filled out. But anyhow, the frustrations arose by that. She did mention that in review of the records, there was not a history of photosensitivity being brought up at previous exams.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Patient DB, do you have your microphone working? No. We can't hear you. You can call into the meeting if you would like. That might be better. So we'll wait for your call. I'm gonna open this up for board discussion, but we will come back to you if you call us up, okay? All right, so for the time being then, let's open this to board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Brown. I did not see a copy of the DMV form included in the complaint. Did we have a copy of that?
No.
Okay. So with that, going off of the report that it requires an MD, DO, ophthalmologist to sign off on it, I think that that eliminates the possibility of Dr. Grimes signing it, even with all the frustrations that occurred, all of the both sides complaints and rebuttals, which are interesting to go into in the end. If she's not qualified to sign the form, then this is a moot point, in my opinion. Thank you.
Okay. I'll also say for the record, if patient DB isn't a patient of the doctor, that's sort of outside our purview on the board. We're here to review the delivery and expectations regarding care. Dr. Carpenter, any comments?
I agree with those last two comments. Yeah, I understand what a frustrating situation this must be for the patient. But yeah, ultimately, this is not something that really is under our purview or that we could rule on as far as his care with Dr. Grimes.
Okay. Ms. Galan, comments?
Yeah, I would like to see that, kind of like see the form too, and hear what DB has to say about it. But I also think that it's kind of outside of it, the scope. So that's where I'm at right now. Thank you.
Mr. Hamed, comments?
No comment, Madam President.
Okay. Patient DB, we're going to pause here. I think you're trying to call us up. Okay.
He should be connected momentarily.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, so we hear you, patient DB. If you'd like to take a moment and address the board with your concerns, this is your opportunity.
All right, thank you. So here's this. Are you guys hearing the echo? I'll turn mine down, that's better. Okay, so here's what happened. Part of that is correct. I did file an ADOT motor vehicle division form for a waiver of window tint. It's called the application for window tint medical exemption. I did file that. The way the VA policy is, you file the document, and then that document is sent to the last doctor that you've seen. So it was a different doctor that I was seen by, but Dr. Amy Grimes, kind of like what you mentioned earlier, is the overseer for the clinic. So she signs off on his work, and she also came in to, I guess, support whatever it is his findings were. So I did submit that form. The form clearly states that it requires the signature of a medical doctor or an ophthalmologist. I thought I included that form. So in my discussion with the doctor who did my exam, he said he would not refer me to an ophthalmologist because he didn't feel that was warranted. Within my medical record, which I have several copies of, we have medication Pantenol, which is for eye drops. If you look at the side effects of those eye drops, it increases photosensitivity to sunlight or to light in general. I have a history of trauma to my eyes. I'm diabetic, and I have a history where I've made mention that my eyes are sensitive to light. So what in turn happened was I took the form to the clinic first. There's a process. So you take the form, I took the form to the clinic And in the clinic, the representative at the front desk took it and took it to, at least said, alleged, they took it to Dr. Amy Grimes. Dr. Amy Grimes said it was illegal for them to sign forms outside of the VA. I used to work for the VA, so I knew that that wasn't correct. So I went down to the release of information, and I submitted it the proper way, and I followed up with Dr. Amy Grimes via email advising this is the proper way, but it's not illegal to submit this. One of the doctors working under her, whom I also filed a complaint against in my phone conversation with this individual, stated that it was illegal in the VA system, which I told him that's incorrect. And then in our conversation, he said it was a clinic's practice. Only the eye clinic did it. And so at that point I told him, and he said they did it with all veterans. So again, for me, it's not so much this form to get the window tint. I worked as a 27 and a half years as an FMF corpsman. So medical is what I do. I'm not saying I'm a doctor or anything like that. But when you tell me that this is how you treat all veterans, I have a problem with it. And that's what I continually voice to the VA. And I also filed a complaint with their patient admin, in which in the patient admin's case summary, Dr. Amy Grimes repeatedly admits that this is what they tell all veterans to, when they have problems with photosensitivity, to go and get sunglasses. And I said, that's not measurable. You're not, and during my meeting with a different doctor, Dr. Amy Grimes, via iMessage, openly admitted that she had concerns because what if a veteran of the clinic decides to go out of state? What if they take the form and uses it for something illegal? And what was her other concern? Oh, yeah, those are the big three. So a patient might go out of state. They might try to get an illegal tint, which the form basically is telling you the type of, you know, it's allowing you to only get a tint to the front and to your front driver and passenger windows. The other tints are totally legal, so there's no issues there. But it's her personal view during my meeting with the other doctor that also concerned me, because I said, so basically you're turning down the form because you're concerned that a veteran might take it and use it illegally, try to get some other kind of illegal tint, which is virtually impossible. This is the state of Arizona. You can tint your windows. You can't, the only thing the waiver allows you to do is darken the front windows. Now, more importantly to me is when I did the patient advocate investigation, again, Dr. Amy Grimes admitted this is a practice of the clinic, and this is what they tell all veterans. She says it repeatedly in this investigation by the patient advocate. But my problem here is this form requires a signature of an ophthalmologist. Once this investigator brought that up, that's when they said, oh, well, he needs to see an ophthalmologist. I can't sign the form. This is Dr. Amy Grimes and the other doctor that I filed a complaint against, but he was removed, I guess, because he's not licensed here in Arizona. But repeatedly here, she admits this is a common practice of the clinic to tell all veterans who are suffering from some type of photosensitivity, such as myself, to go and get sunglasses. I have sunglasses, after sunglasses, $400 Maui Jims, another pair, and another pair. It's not measurable. If you're not telling a patient exactly what type of sunglasses he or she should be wearing or seeking to purchase, if you're not documenting this, that you're telling this patient to go and get some type of sunglasses, especially the patients, veteran patients whom are diabetic. Now I'm wondering how many have suffered even worse symptoms, including blindness, because their concerns were more or less ignored. And again, thrown off to just telling them to get sunglasses. That's improper. That's unethical. And that's my biggest dispute. Dr. Amy Grimes and I, again, she is the chief optometrist for the clinic. She is not an ophthalmologist. And when the investigator started asking into that, that's when she said, oh, he needs to see an ophthalmologist. I can't sign this form. So it never should have gone this far. When I submitted this form, if an ophthalmologist is what was required, then they should have notified me. Hey, we got to set you up to see the ophthalmologist in the clinic. And that way the ophthalmologist can evaluate you. But that wasn't the first option. It was immediately denied. And I have the denial here from this other physician that was involved.
Thank you, DB. We appreciate your comments. So I'm gonna bring this back to the board if there are any further comments.
One of the doctors mentioned that there was no history. I have copies of my records right here right with me, where I repeatedly mentioned photosensitivity, the brightness to my eyes. I have repeated medical records that I pull personally myself, where I've discussed this.
Okay, patient.
With the first one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, I can hear you.
For the board discussion now, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Board members, any further comments regarding after hearing complainants' comments?
This is Dr. Brown.
Excuse me. Can I say one more thing?
Please.
Just real quick. This is it. I'm not looking to have anybody terminated or anything like that. That's not how I roll as a veteran. We like to fix things. Prior service, when I was in the service, it's let's fix it. This is a policy that I'm looking to have removed. That's it.
Thank you,
patient. Thank you.
Dr. Brown, you want to continue?
I do. Thank you. I'd like to thank DB for his service. I appreciate anyone who takes time to serve. I'm grateful for actually his very last comment, which was, he's concerned mostly about the policy, and the policy is outside our purview. Our responsibility is to oversee the optometric care given to patients. And as she's been involved in the policies and administration, I don't see any care violations of his optometric care. And so, as it goes with seeing an ophthalmologist in the public world, you can self-refer to any ophthalmologist and see them. I understand that it's best if it's or most beneficial for the patient to stay within the VA system, and that requires a referral. And then again, we're back to administrative. So as far as the optometric care given to the patient, I don't find a violation. I find this to be a frustration with policies and procedures, and that falls outside of our realm. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I'll also offer, just for the record, that the first provider, and this, you know, a little bit outside my role here, but the first provider, you could pursue a complaint against that person. It sounds like you did. If they failed to refer you for that, that's an avenue you can take, and also the avenue through the VA. But Dr. Grimes didn't provide immediate care. That's our purview here, is to assess the care given directly from doctor to patient. And so in this case, I'm going to have to move that we dismiss. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Brown. I'll second that.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the case against Dr. Grimes. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. I'm going to go back now to agenda item F1. Dr. Michael Martin, IR number 202508. I will need to recuse myself in this complaint. So Dr. Mastores will take over.
Hello, Dr. Mastores here. So we are going over IR number 202508, Dr. Martin. Dr. Moffitt has been recused. Can we get a summary for this case?
Excuse me, Dr. Mastores.
Yeah.
This is Margaret Whalen. Would you please state the doctor's first name? We have several, Dr. Martin.
Oh, so sorry. This is Dr. Michael Martin.
Thank you so much. Proceed.
Can I get a summary?
This is Dr. Brown. My brief summary is that the complaint is that the refraction was performed by a technician. And the response from Dr. Martin is that the entire exam, including refraction, was reviewed by Dr. Martin with the patient and the findings were found to be accepted. That is my brief review.
And can I ask if patient GC is present?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, GC. And is Dr. Martin present?
Yes.
Okay, we'll start with comments from patient GC.
Alrighty. When I went to the office, they asked me in the room, and a guy named Jeff did the exam, or, you know, is one better, is two better, which is better, one or two, and he's doing that thing, the eye exam. Again, I just thought it was supposed to be that the actual optometrist did that. I wasn't sure. I'm not even sure what kind of a complaint I was making. I mean, I'm not upset or anything. I think it's kind of silly that if a trained technician knows how to do it, why they shouldn't do it so the optometrist can do other things. But again, it was a guy named Jeff. We were in the room alone. We chatted a bit. I told him about my vitreous separation and I'm photophobic, yada, yada. And he had to do it twice. One of the lenses on the OS side, the sinister side, was a blurred. But he did it twice. He said, oh, it'd go away, but it never went away. I'm not even sure what you want me to say. It was just in a room named Jeff who did it. He actually may be an optometrist. I don't know, but to my, I just feel he was just a technician. He didn't do a bad job. He tried again, as I said, he did it twice, and then he walked me to the other room where I eventually met with Dr. Martin. There were two other, technicians in that room who, was that dulled my eyes, put drops in, and then the one guy touched it with something, and he couldn't get the left eye. He kept hitting the left eye with whatever gizmo, and a young lady had to show him how to do it. They had to redo my eyes a couple of times, and then Martin did the bright light in the eyes thing, look down, look left, look right. I'm not even sure if if Jeff told him that I had vitreous separation, because I guess when that happens, boy, is light really bright. But okay. Do you have any questions? Maybe I could answer a question.
Okay, thank you, GC. We'll get to you back to you in just a minute, if possible. Next, I'll call Dr. Martin or counsel.
I'll go first. Thank you, Vice President Mastores.
Just a couple of brief comments. I think our narrative response that we provided to the board summarizes Dr. Martin's involvement with this particular patient. There's no question.
Excuse me, Ms. Gailey. I'm sorry. Could you please state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I apologize. I'm Megan Gailey, legal counsel for Dr. Martin. Thanks, Margaret. Basically, he saw the patient on October 9th, 2024 and performed a full exam, which is indicated within his record from that particular day. The technician did perform the initial manifest refraction, but Dr. Martin, pursuant to his custom and practice, went through and reviewed the findings of the manifest refraction, discussed with the patient, and also discussed all of his other findings with the patient, and then made a modification to the prescription to accommodate or address what this particular patient wanted with his new prescription. Based upon the patient's statements today, it doesn't appear that he had any harm as a result of the appointment with Dr. Martin on October 9th. There doesn't appear to be a violation of the Practice Act, and we would ask that this case be dismissed. Dr. Martin had a little bit of technical difficulty logging in this morning, but I do believe he's here. I'm happy to address the board or make a statement, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you. Dr. Martin?
Yes.
Would you like to address us?
Yeah, certainly. I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I read the complaint, but it is certainly customary. We have trained technicians that go through extensive training. They do what most technicians do in a facility like this, where they take acuities. They do pupils, refraction, pressure. If there's any problem with any of those things, like pupils, they're instructed to not dilate and come get the doctor. If there's a problem with refraction, they're instructed to put a note on the chart, you know, difficult refraction or difficulties, or could you please recheck refraction or whatever. So we have standard practices in place. And then besides that, so then what I do is I always look at, you know, what the complaint is. If there is one visually, I look at what they're entering acuities that are with or without, in this case, without correction. I look at the, in this case, auto refraction or glasses. Then I look at what we got for refraction, and I look at what the endpoint best corrected acuities are. I look at all the information on every patient. We determine if there's any something that looks questionable to me that doesn't make sense. I will certainly recheck the refraction, do it all the time. In this case, he was 20/30 plus or minus uncorrected, a little bit of nearsighted and astigmatism correction was corrected to 20/20 minus, which correlated to his mild cataracts. There was nothing that was out of place or abnormal that I would need to recheck as far as go to the actual refraction again. But I did look at all that. And then we also talked about the patient only wanted distance correction. So I removed the add power that was given by the technician. And, you know, I checked everything. I rechecked his pressures because I was questioning because it was high. I rechecked them. So again, I do recheck all these things when necessary. And that's it. And I think the other complaint, or at least comment, I don't really know, was that he didn't receive a prescription, but he did. We had him sign a release for that. So other than that, I'm not sure what else there is to address.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Martin. Now I'm going to open up for board discussion. Any board members have comments?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I would just say that just in reviewing the case and the records and the explanation, I think everything was handled appropriately and that the patient was not harmed in any way by what was done. I don't see any violations of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Dr. Brown, any comments?
No comments. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Galan?
I don't have any additional comments at this time.
And Mr. Hamed?
No comment.
Okay, thank you. So it looks like we've rounded up our discussion, and I would agree as well that there's no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. It's kind of standard of care or standard policy in a big ophthalmology optometry practice that technicians assist the doctor. It does look like Dr. Martin reviewed everything, even he added some additional testing to figure out the eye pressure and things like that. So do we have any motions?
This is Dr. Brown. I move that we dismiss this complaint as it does not violate the Optometric Act.
Thank you. Any seconds?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second that.
Okay, excellent. We will vote. Dr. Carpenter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
And I, Dr. Mastoris, vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Dr. Moffitt. Moving on to agenda item F3, Jenny Law, Dr. Law, IR number 202513. Is patient BJ present? I hear nothing. Council Megan Gailey, I believe you represent Dr. Law as well.
I do.
Okay, and I see you, Dr. Law, also. All right, can we start with the board summary, please?
This is Dr. Mastoris. Oh, not yet. Okay, so this is IR number 202513, Dr. Law, patient BJ. The patient was seen, looks like August 29th, 2023, and then for follow-ups after that. The patient had a diode laser procedure with Dr. Funky, an ophthalmologist, and then she was put on post-op drops, steroid drops, and antibiotic drops. But as time went on, she let it be known that she was allergic to those drops. And then when Dr. Law saw her again, there was more inflammation and pain. She wasn't quite sure if it was an allergic reaction or not and needed the steroid to help that inflammation. And so Dr. Law tried to avoid the steroids, but it was necessary at the time. And I think that is my summary.
Thank you. Council Megan Gailey, would you like to address the board first?
I would. Thank you, Dr. Mastoris. I think your summary was accurate and complete as to Dr. Law's care and involvement with this particular patient. I think it is worth noting that Dr. Law did not have any involvement with the patient during the laser procedure. She was not present for the preoperative care. She was not present nor the one who prescribed the initial postoperative course of antibiotics and steroids. Dr. Law is the one who followed up and tried to address this particular patient's complaints and symptoms and the possibility that she was in fact having an allergic reaction to one of those postoperative medications that was provided to the patient. Dr. Law worked with this patient to try to come up with the best course and action in order to address the patient's complaints, taking into account the information that the patient relayed to her about her possible issue with steroids. Dr. Law recommended the Lodamax and provided this particular patient with a sample of the medication. When it was brought to Dr. Law's attention that the patient was unable to afford the medication, her plan was to look for a different alternative so that the patient could continue the course and improve with the medications given her immediate postoperative reactions. This particular patient then reached out to the office to say that she had found a coupon and was able to now afford the Lodamax that Dr. Law had previously prescribed. And basically, the patient never followed up with the office. It is our position that Dr. Law provided appropriate care and treatment to this patient and did not violate the Practice Act, and we would ask that the board dismiss this case. Dr. Law is also here, and she would like to make a statement to the board as well. And I appreciate your time this morning.
Hello. So in response to the patient's complaint, I would like to state that I'm regretful that the patient feels this way regarding her care with me. I truly did try to work with her to manage her concerns. For the allergic response, I approached it in a stepwise manner by first eliminating both post-operative drops that were ordered by another provider. When that was insufficient in managing the patient's complaints, I discussed the use of Lodamax with the patient. After a thorough discussion of the risk and benefits with the patient, we decided to proceed with the Lodamax. After prescribing the Lodamax, it did in fact improve her signs and symptoms. Unfortunately, she later voiced that the cost would prohibit her from using the medication. Once I became aware of the patient's concern regarding the cost, I planned to look into alternatives while she used the samples that I had given her. Before I had a chance to investigate further, the patient called me to let us know that she was able to obtain the medication, as Megan mentioned, with the coupon she had found. I was unaware that she still had lingering concerns regarding her care until I received this complaint. I believe that I provided the appropriate care and treatment to this patient, and I ask that this case to be dismissed.
Thank you, Dr. Law. So we'll open this up now for board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Mastoris. I'd like to make a note that in her records prior to this procedure, there was no indication that she was allergic to steroids, and it was only brought up after the fact. And even, you know, really it's kind of unknown if she does have a steroid allergy. I believe she also mentioned she had been told by another provider that she should avoid steroids. But in the place of post-op inflammation, sometimes we have to go that route anyways. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mastoris. I appreciate your comments. I agree. So steroids are a class of medication. It wasn't divulged before the procedure was done. Patient would be very uncomfortable without a steroid after surgery, as is evident in the case. She did become uncomfortable once she discontinued the prednisolone. And we don't really understand why she had been cautioned against steroids in the past, if that was a generalized caution, if it was a specific caution with a particular one drug. Nothing in the history indicated a contraindication to steroid use. So, and Dr. Law saw her after she had a allergic reaction or presumed allergic reaction, not knowing which medication necessarily the patient was reacting to, and tried to address it with a different steroid. So I see no inappropriate care here. It looked like good care to me, actually. And that's my take on it. Other board members, comments?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I agree with what has just been shared, and feel like the care that she received, especially by Dr. Law, was very good and appropriate. And so I agree that we should probably dismiss this case. There's been no violation.
Thank you. Dr. Brown, any comments for the board?
I agree with those that have been given. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Galan, any comments?
Nothing further. I agree with what's been said also.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, comments?
I agree as well, actually, that I think that the care was provided was good, a good standard, and if anything, Dr. Law went above and beyond. I could tell just based on her written records and also her statements and stuff like that, which compared to what other doctors do in some form or fashion or level, if you will. So I think it should be dismissed accordingly.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Would someone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Mastoris. I motion to dismiss this case based on no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the case against Dr. Law as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Next, agenda item F4, Dr. Lisa Field Sherlock, IR number 202502. Is patient DH present?
He was present earlier, Madam President, but it doesn't look like it right now.
Okay. And Council Megan Gailey, I believe you represent Dr. Field Sherlock?
I do.
And then Dr. Field Sherlock, I see that you're present also.
Yes.
Can we start with the board summary, please? I'll offer board summary. So Dr. Sherlock saw patient DH on January 2nd, 2024 for 3 week post-op status post CEOS. Patient presented with distance visual acuities of 20/250, pinhole no improvement, and an auto refract with 20/200 vision. Patient's chief complaint at that visit was that there was a decline in the vision in the left eye since the last visit, and that the left eye visual acuity was extremely fuzzy. She complained her drops burned and she had more floaters since the last visit. Patient was concerned about losing her vision altogether. Those were her words. Patient had a history of retinal detachment with traction and poor repair with thesis bulbi in the right eye. Patient was not dilated. Patient's pre-op left eye visual acuity was 20/40. That's my summary. So, Council Megan Daly, if you'd like to address the board, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Madam President. Just briefly, I would defer to the summary that we provided with our narrative response as to the care and treatment that Dr. Field-Turlock provided on January 2nd, 2024. Dr. Field-Turlock is here and she would like to make a statement to the board. And so I would defer to her to address her care in this particular regard.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Field-Turlock.
Thank you for letting me address the board. I've been working with this particular cataract surgeon for over 25 years. He's very meticulous, he's very careful, and he does a full dilated exam on every single patient before surgery. He found nothing wrong with her other than hemorrhages and drusen in her macula. When he's dealing with these kind of patients, he gets in, he gets out, he doesn't polish the capsule. And as a result, most of these patients develop a pretty significant cloudy capsule quickly. So when I saw her on the second, I thought the findings in the exam kind of explained her complaints. Do I wish that I had dilated her? Yes. If she did have one at that time, I could have gotten into her surgery quicker. And now I'll never know after 36 years of practice, did I actually miss a retinal detachment? I'm hoping when the oil's removed, her vision is good. And as a side note, I turned 65 last month and I'm no longer practicing.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Sherlock. Does that conclude your comments?
Yes.
I understand patient DH is also here now. So if patient DH would like to take this time to address the board, this is your opportunity. Your microphone is on, patient DH. There you go.
Okay. I have, from day one after my surgery, I told him there was a problem. I'm blind in one eye. I didn't want to be blind in this eye. Nobody checked me out right.
Does that conclude your comments, patient DH?
I want to know why this wasn't done right.
I don't think you asked her questions on it. I'm just trying to help her out, man.
I can't see, so.
No problem. So just to explain what we're looking for here is if you want to offer your perspective, this is the time to do it about what occurred between you and then Dr. Field-Turlock.
I told her that I could not see, that I was having trouble seeing. They took certain pictures and stuff like that, but nobody ever looked. They dilated me, but nobody ever looked in my eye. I'm just wondering why. Is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
So this is your opportunity to say whatever you would like. We are not having a conversation. Once you've concluded your comments, we'll open it up for board discussion and you'll get to hear the comments. If we have direct questions for you, then we'll exchange with you then.
All right, go ahead.
No, Don, you go ahead. She's asking you to give just your input. She said that her eye was dilated and the doctor just dilated her eye and didn't physically take a look at it.
And they didn't. They took pictures and didn't.
They took pictures of her eye, I guess, ma'am, and they didn't discuss it and go over any of it with her. They didn't let her know any of the findings, what they thought of
it. They just said everything was okay.
They assured her that everything was okay, apparently, after dilating her eye, but failed to take a look at it.
Thank you. Does this conclude your comments?
Yes.
Thank you. So I'll ask you to remute your microphone now.
Nice to meet you.
Dr. Dr. Moffitt, you muted yours.
Thank you for telling me. I'm sorry, I said we've had an opportunity now to hear from both the respondent and complainant. I'm going to close open discussion and we'll discuss now amongst the board members. I can start with my comments. I appreciate Dr. Field-Sherlock at least admitting to some wrongdoing. It's clear that the patient should have been dilated. There's no question. There were lots of red flags here I'm going to highlight for the record. 3 weeks post-op and patient presents with 20/250 vision, pinhole, no improvement right then and there. That should have been followed up on. Patient should be seen better at that point unless there is an obvious reason and a documented reason in the record. Even if I saw the capsule was hazy, I would have evaluated the macula at a minimum to just to rule out any CME or any other problem. The macula could have been off at that point, and I think Dr. Field-Sherlock understands it. Next, vision, patient had a complicated history in the fellow eye. Not every patient comes in and tells you, volunteers, hey, I've got fragile retinas. I've had a problem in the past. You know, I'm monocular and can't see. This is a high-risk patient. Red flags were flying all over the place, and patient wasn't listened to and wasn't evaluated. Ms. Gailey, I'm just addressing this in general, but you comment that the patient was dilated. The patient was dilated at a previous exam, not at this exam. And the patient was not, although you say examined, they didn't have a posterior segment exam. So you can't even claim in this case that Dr. Field-Sherlock looked at the previous visit and thought that the patient was dilated and evaluated because she wasn't. There's really no excuse that this patient wasn't dilated at that visit. Had Dr. Field-Sherlock dilated and ruled out any problem in the macula or the retina at that visit, you know, she would essentially be off the hook here. It's because she didn't look for it. There's no excuse. This is our job, is to watch the patient's vision and to watch out for the patient's welfare. So I appreciate she feels regret. I really do. She should. And the patient suffers now with loss of vision, in my estimation, as a result, because nobody looked for this until too late. So that's my assessment of it. Other board members?
This is Dr. Brown. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Dr. Brown.
I have a question for Dr. Field-Sherlock. In the response that was submitted, there is a statement that says that the patient did not have symptoms that required a posterior exam. And I want to know if Dr. Field-Sherlock agrees with that statement.
No. Okay. As I stated, I wish I had dilated her.
Thank you.
I just felt like her cloudy capsule and the problems in the back accounted for her complaints. I will say that I could tell, I don't remember her, I only saw her once almost a year ago, but I will tell you that I could tell I was being cautious with her because I don't normally see a patient back in 4 weeks, which is what we did.
Thank you. That concludes my comments.
This is Dr. Mastroes. It's all coming back to me now. We had had another complaint, and I was just wondering if we could review how we ruled on that one.
So I don't think we can.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll have my own opinion and assessment here in a moment.
This is Sami Hamid. Let's keep it to the merits of this one, guys.
Don't look at past history and decisions like that. Okay. I feel for this patient so hard and for the doctor involved. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Certainly, I agree with what's been said. My heart does go out to the patient as well as Dr. Sherlock, and just a tough situation. Most of my questions that I wanted to ask had been answered just in listening to the discussion. So I really don't have anything further to add.
Thank you. Ms. Galan, any comments?
I don't have any, further questions or anything like that. It's a very tough situation for both sides, and hopefully we can resolve it as best we can.
Thank you. I think the rest of the board is more sympathetic than I am. I feel for your position, Dr. Field Sherlock, but really it was your responsibility and the patient suffers as a result. So my sympathies lie very firmly with the patient in this case. Mr. Hamed, comments?
I feel for both sides on this one. I really do. I mean, you know, to the patient, I understand your point. I'm a legally blind man myself. I know what that means, but like if any procedure of anything, there's always a risk we run, if you will. So you took that risk and that's unfortunate that what happened. And if Dr. Sherlock, I think some better care could be done. But with that being said, though, I would reluctantly vote to dismiss this case because it's moot. She's not practicing anymore. It's not like she's going to go back for restatement of her license in the future, Dr. Sherlock. So I would reluctantly vote to dismiss. There's nothing we can really do about it, actually. Once she retired, therefore, it made it moot, basically, in effect. We lost our jurisdiction, in effect.
I disagree.
Let's get a legal opinion from Ms. Baskin on that, shall we?
Okay.
Thank you. From what I'm understanding, her license is still active until November of 2025. So the board still has jurisdiction over her. And additionally, an individual is not able to retire or let their license lapse. We have a specific healthcare statute that allows the board to retain jurisdiction over individuals. So I understand your thinking, Mr. Hamed, but the board still has jurisdiction. Now, the fact we would need to know whether or not the doctor has formally retired, whether she is working right now, and that, you know, all those issues may, you know, impact should the board decide to take disciplinary action in this matter based on the conduct that occurred and that appears to be a deviation from the standard of care. But again, the board does have jurisdiction.
Okay, noted, that's fine.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to add one thing. I think that regardless of the status of her practicing, this definitely needs to be documented. And to whatever extent we as a board feel that is necessary.
It's
just my
opinion. Now, if the patient in this case wants to pursue other avenues and options outside of this process, that's up to her and an attorney she can seek legal advice from on that one in this case here. But Ms. Gailey, I got a question for you about your client. Has she stopped practicing or has she retired or is she going to inform the board of her relinquishing her license?
Mr. Hamed, Dr. Field Sherlock is here and I will have her address this question specifically so that it is coming from her and not I, if that is okay.
I'm fine with that.
I have retired. It was not a result of this. I let the company know a year ago that I would be turning 65 in November and that is when I formally retired. So I am no longer practicing.
I'd like to address something that Mr. Hamed brought up, that with surgery, there's known risk. And I agree there is risk with surgery. However, we also put our confidence and our faith in our doctor that they will perform the standard of care. So this is a very different issue if the standard of care isn't met, as opposed to risk associated with surgery. The standard of care here wasn't met. It's clear. I don't think any of the doctors on the board could make an argument alternatively. And so that's the basis for my strong feelings in this. All right, so we had a motion. Is there a there was a motion to dismiss from Mr. Hamed. Is there
no, I didn't make a motion. I said I would be open to it. I didn't make a motion. I never said the words.
Sorry. I appreciate that. I thought that's what you did. So what I think is appropriate in this case is that, and I'll put this out there for discussion, that we would offer a consent agreement. Number one, I believe there's a violation of the statute 32-1701G regarding competency or incompetency. I'll read the statute. So any conduct or practice, including incompetency that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of patients or the public. I believe that patient DH suffered as a result of incompetency. R4-21-304, Dr. Field Sherlock failed to meet the vision examination standards when she failed to dilate the patient In addition, she violated the rules adopted by this chapter. Statute 32-1743, the standard of care here was not met. She failed to dilate or perform a fundus exam for new floaters complaint following cataract extraction. This is a known retinal complaint, and patient or doctor, excuse me, failed to dilate.
Dr. Moffitt, this is Mona Baskin. I apologize, I don't mean to interrupt, but you cited the vision examination standards that she failed to comply with that under R421304. Now, were you also citing, and maybe I missed it, ARS 32-1743-A11, violating any of the rules adopted by the board pursuant to this chapter? That's the gateway chat. That's the gateway statute that lets us cite the rules. Yes, so I think that's what you're stating.
Out of order. I'm sorry.
Okay. No. You're fine. I just wanted to be very clear for the record. Okay. Thank you.
In previous situation, I actually believe we all agreed that a civil penalty of $5,000 was appropriate. A 2-week suspension with probation. Now, if Dr. Field Sherlock isn't practicing, then maybe we need to discuss that. And also 10 hours of CE in retina. This is what I thought was an appropriate starting point. Other board members?
Madam President, be careful. Each case on their own merits. Don't look at past cases to make that decision.
I'm not.
With all due respect, Ms. Baskin, I got a question for you.
Yes, Mr. Hamed.
Could we, as part of a consent decree, is it allowed under statute or under the state regulations? Could we include in there that she could have to relinquish her license or no?
You may want to go into executive session for that. There may be other ways to address that since she is no longer working, since she has told us that she has retired. And other boards deal with that a little bit differently. I think that what the board could do is you could, should you wish to offer a consent agreement in this case based on those violations, it would have to be something that would be in alignment with her retirement. And I'm going to need to take a look at your statutes a little further regarding whether or not and I could maybe even if we could take a break, I'd like one so I can pull them up and speak with Ms. Whalen regarding what your options would be, if that's possible.
I think it's fine in this case. In the matter of present, I think that'd be appropriate, actually, because this is a very unique situation where we have Dr. Sherlock in her situation where she's already retired and she's not practicing. If it was practicing currently, then I could see in some cases some of the things, but I think because it's so unique, we need to get some more advice on this one.
And what other boards do, just to tell the the board members and Ms. Gailey, what they have crafted is what I use with other boards is a consent agreement for a failure not to renew with other disciplinary stipulations that are in there, such as, you have your options, such as a civil penalty. You can still suspend the license even if she is not working right now, or she's, has formally retired, because that's a disciplinary action that you can put on there. But what I think the board, as far as continuing education, for somebody that has retired, there may not be any remedial value in doing that at this point.
My point exactly, Counselor.
Yes. So there may be a provision that the board could consider that she would agree to following her compliance with whatever you would offer in a consent agreement, that she would agree to retire her license. But I would need to take a break and look into that. And then maybe we'd want to go into executive session. I know we're on a time frame for people to leave the meeting, but I think this is very important. So well, if we could.
Also, just for a minute, I don't mean to interrupt you, Baskin, but here's a distinguishing issue, I think, right? We're looking for disciplinary action that follows the license. Just because
someone
is retired, it doesn't mean that she wouldn't come out of retirement and decide to work later. So we want a disciplinary action that is attached to the physical license so that this is reviewed in the future if it ever needs to be. So just asking someone if they're retired and dismissing a case based on that, I think is inappropriate. I'm not asking I'm not asking for Dr. Field Sherlock's license. I'm not asking her to forfeit her license, but I am looking to appropriate responsibility for inappropriate care that was given. So, you know, I'm
correct.
Not sure we really
correct.
Need, in my opinion, I'm not sure we really need to look at for having her forfeit her license. I wouldn't support that. So that's my opinion on the board. If we could get other board members' opinions really quick, we might know if we want to take that route and take a break, or if we want to finish this case and then maybe take a break.
This is Dr. Brown. I believe that the actions that we should take will be against the license and not the person. I believe that the license is not guaranteed to be retired or guaranteed to not be renewed, whatever. I believe that we move forward as it's an active license as it stands, and we take the actions that we would take whether we were told they were going to retire or not.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Dr. Carpenter, your opinion?
Yes, I can see both sides of it, but yeah, that's my thinking, is we should probably just treat this as an active licensee. I wouldn't say that I'm opposed to just having her relinquish the license. I mean, that would,
yeah, fine.
If that isn't indeed something that we can do, you know, I if she's not planning on practicing, I don't know. I guess we just have to talk about, like, if we're asking her to complete CE and things like that, is that really even relevant? But I guess in the sense that if ever she did want to reinstate that, then she would have to show that she satisfied all those things.
Dr.
So I guess I could go either way.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Dr. Mastoris?
This is Dr. Mastoris. So complicated. I kind of agree with what Dr. Brown said. And so that's where I lean is with the license.
So what if we, just trying to expedite this for everyone's benefit, what if we offered a consent agreement, a civil penalty of $5,000, a 2-week suspension with 12-month probation, and we cut out the CE? Could we all agree on that? I would. Dr. Brown?
I can agree with that.
Dr. Carpenter?
I would agree. The 12-month probation is to not practice optometry.
No, we can't say that. It's a 2-week suspension, 12-month probation. That just gives us, I think that's mandatory as part of the suspension. And that just gives us some oversight. If she did go back into practice, then we would know about it. And I'll say again, I speak for myself on the board, but no one's trying to take Dr. Field Sherlock's license away. We are trying to, you know, address specifically this lack of standard of care given in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, that would definitely be amenable, but I just wanted to explain what the reason for the 12-month probation is. A probation term after a period of suspension allows an individual to comply with the terms that the board has imposed. So in this case, hypothetically, should the board offer a consent agreement for a 2-week suspension followed by a 12-month probation and a term to pay a $5,000 civil penalty, whatever civil penalty you determine, then the doctor would have 12 months to comply with that term. So let's say hypothetically, the doctor would go ahead and serve the 2 weeks of suspension. Her license would be probated, but let's say within 30 days of a license be placed on probation, she paid the $5,000. There's a standard term in these agreements where she would be able to come back to the board and ask the board to terminate the period of probation in this case. So that's how it would work. And what we could also do, because this is a consent agreement that would be negotiated between Ms. Whalen and the doctor and counsel, is we can include a term in the findings of facts that the doctor has told the board that as of November 2024, she has retired from the practice of optometry. So that at least would be a term within the agreement between the parties that would memorialize what her intent is.
Thank you, Mona.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay, so I had asked the other board members what they could agree to. Ms. Galan, I'm going to bring it to you. I said consent agreement, civil penalty, $5,000, 2-week suspension with 12-month probation included. What are your thoughts on that? Could you agree with that?
I do agree with that. And I think that it's not, for me, it's not about deciding if the license, you know, what she's doing. We have to, it's an active license. This is how I agree with how to proceed. And I think, I don't know how it works exactly on this board, but I'm sure that's something she can discuss and call into the board about later on, but like, you know, a surrender of the license or whatever going forward in the future. If this is, you know, as an agreement is too much for her with retirement.
Thank you, Ms. Galan. Mr. Hamed, can you agree to those terms or do you have other thoughts?
You know, I would like to probably extend the suspension longer because basically she's not practicing. Let's face it. Let's call it for what it is. I think a 6-month suspension might be more appropriate considering the circumstances.
Ms. Baskin, I think that there's a limit on the suspension that we can ask for without going into a hearing. You're muted. I'm sorry.
This is a consent agreement, so
right.
You can really include whatever terms that you would like. However, the terms would be need to be commensurate with the conduct that you find the violations for.
Got it.
Okay. So if Mr. Hamed believes a 6-month suspension is appropriate, Dr. Brown, does that have your support?
So again, I think we're staying with just what the offense is, what the right. license is, and ignoring the fact that she said she's retired. We're treating this as an active license with a current thing. So I would keep it at the feel more comfortable at the initially stated timeframes.
Okay, Dr. Carpenter, what are your thoughts on a 6-month suspension versus 2 weeks, or if you have an alternative?
I'm fine with the 2 weeks.
Okay, Dr. Mastoris?
I could go either way.
Ms. Galan?
I lean more to the 2 weeks just because I believe that the suspension is a harsher punishment than the probation, and I'm not looking to increase, I guess, the discipline level. I just want to make sure that the public's safe and protected in case she chooses to practice again. So
I believe I'm going to make a motion that we offer a consent agreement to Dr. Field Sherlock, a disciplinary action regarding civil penalty of $5,000 and a 2-week suspension with 12 months probation period following for failure to follow the standard of care in seeing a postoperative patient and failure to dilate with a new complaint of new onset floaters in the vision. Is there a second?
Oh, second, go ahead. Restores, I second. Oh,
yes. And can you please include those violations, which I believe were ARS 1701.
Yep.
I'll just say H E and 1743A11 as further defined in AAC R4 21304.
Yes.
I have one.
You want me to say it again?
Can I interrupt? Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm concerned about the citation of the competency. Wasn't that the first one you listed?
Yes.
I find the word competent to reflect more than just a one-time mistake. And so I'm a little uncomfortable with that one citation, all the rest of them, the punishment, everything I'm good with. I just have a little bit of concern with competency being, but I'm open for discussion on that, but I hesitate on that one.
All right. So let's do this. Does anybody else, Dr. Carpenter, do you share that concern about 32-1701? Would you like me to remove it?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Mastoris?
Yes, I could agree to that.
Okay, I'll go there since that seems the majority. So then I'll restate, I'd like to move that we file a disciplinary complaint against Dr. Field Sherlock and offer a consent agreement, civil penalty for $5,000, 2-week suspension with 12-month probation following, for violating 32-1701 1743A11, violating rules adopted by this chapter, and R4-21-304 for failure to meet vision examination standards. Is there a second?
Dr. Mastroes, I'll second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote no.
Okay. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
I vote yes. Aye.
Dr. Brown, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastroes?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-1.
Okay. And
a little break here, Mona. 5-minute bathroom break.
Yes, Dr. Moffitt, I just want to follow up. I was writing during your motion. Did you also state that if not accepted, move to a formal interview, and if not accepted, move to formal hearing? That's the standard language with the disciplinary motion.
I did not.
Okay.
For the record.
Yes, please.
Okay. So if the consent agreement is not agreed to, we'll move towards formal interview, and if not, formal hearing.
Is that your motion?
Yes.
Okay.
My motion. Do we need to vote?
We need to have the second assent, and then we need to.
Rego Brown, I second.
Thank you. And then a second vote, you said also, correct, Mona?
Yes, please.
Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote no.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastroes?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-1. Mona, did you still want your 5-minute break?
No, I'm fine.
Nope. Okay, we're all right. Okay, so then we'll move forward to agenda item F5. Dr. Jennifer Jensen Wilson, IR number 202507. Is patient MP present? Counsel for Dr. Wilson? Is Dr. Wilson present? Okay. Can I have a board summary, please?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I can summarize this. So patient MP initially saw Dr. Chmielewski on April 29th and was provided of 2024 was provided with a refraction, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe purchased glasses, progressive lenses online with that prescription, was having dizziness and headaches, wasn't able to see well, so came back for a follow-up. This was 4 months later in August with Dr. Jensen Wilson. And she provided her records of that encounter, and as well as her explanation, provided a new prescription. But the patients still struggled, and ultimately saw Dr. Allgood at a different place and got single vision computer glasses, which seemed to perform much better.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. As neither respondent or complainant are here, we'll open this up for board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Mastroes. My biggest concern was giving a 40-year-old a 250 ad. I just don't think that's appropriate. And I think that would be very difficult to get used to. Sometimes it's hard when you don't have the presenting RX like what they're used to. So I think that might've come into play here that I don't really know what she was wearing prior. But there probably was no violation.
I completely agree. Dr. Carpenter, comments?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, as we know, latent hyperopia can be a tough nut to crack. Ultimately, with Dr. Allgood, there was kind of reversal where there was more plus in the left versus the right. But also, it's a lot easier to, there's a lot more forgiveness in a single vision computer RX than trying to do a progressive. So anyways, I say these are things that kind of happen in the course of practice, and there was no violation here.
Thank you. I agree with your comments also. Plus, when you're the third doctor and someone comes to you, you have the benefit of knowing what failed before you. And so there's always there's a safer play to make at that point, get the patient out of the progressive. So that's how I read all of that as well. Dr. Brown, comments?
I agree with everything that's been said. I also didn't see any evidence that Dr. Wilson's office was unwilling to continue to work with this patient. And so I'm grateful that he found a solution, or the patient found a solution, but I don't see any violation.
Thank you. Ms. Galan, comments?
I don't have anything to add.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed?
No comments.
Okay. Would someone like to offer a motion here?
This is Dr. Brown. I move that we dismiss this complaint as it does not violate the Optometric Care Act.
Thank you. I'll second. We've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Jennifer Jensen Wilson, as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Is there any further discussion? Okay, so we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Agenda item F8, Dr. Shannon Friedmeier, IR number 202512. Is patient AP present?
Yes, Madam President.
Yeah, I see them there.
Yeah, AP, you said, right?
Thank you. Okay. Is counsel for Dr. Friedmeier present?
No, it's just now.
Is Dr. Friedmeier present?
Yes.
Okay, much better. You had quite the echo there just a minute ago. So can we get a board summary in this complaint against Dr. Friedmeier, please? I'll offer board summary. Patient AP saw Dr. Friedmeier for comprehensive eye exam on 7/29/24. Patient had advanced cataract and optic nerve cupping was diagnosed. Patient went for glaucoma evaluation after this visit and then followed up with cataract surgeon, Dr. Melanie McCarty. Patient was very upset about upgrade charges for premium IOL. The form, I thought this was interesting, the form with the costs associated with upgrades was not signed by the patient, at least what we were provided at the board. And additional costs outside of insurance and the lack of explanation. Patient felt sort of pushed into buying medication directly from the doctor's office, and also didn't understand why they were asked to see a retinologist without explanation or understanding regarding the necessity of that. Okay, so then I'm going to offer patient AP an opportunity to address the board if you would like to.
Yeah, so my complaint is around the total treatment, means what they have done. They have took my insurance and run the multiple tests. Means I don't know if that tests are required so much, because when I was speaking to some other patients, they are saying they not gone through so many tests. That is the first thing. Second is when I went there first, means when I called to white means my insurance, and they asked me to get a surgeon. So first time when I went there, I clearly explained, and even I attached my email saying that I have my financial constraint, and so I want to finish my surgery within my insurance, and I don't want to go beyond that one. And then when I started my treatment, at that time, means even I asked that it is all covered with my insurance. Even my insurance has told me that my surgery is covered under regular insurance, not under eye insurance. So I was clear that it was be covered. Then when I started my full treatment, at that time, the first I met with doctor, and then they give me the dilution drops. And with dilution drops, I was able to see. So I said, can I postpone my surgery? But when she not responded me. But when I started searching on the Google, it said that that is not a solution, means that is not a treatment. So I said, okay, then I will go ahead with the surgery, but complete it within my insurance whatever my insurance offered me to do that surgery, because I lost my job and I don't have that full financial situation is not good for me. Then when I went to their means for the surgery, at that time, multiple times they have done the test for my eyes. I don't know why they have done, but what I realized is, means what I was getting a feeling is that is because I have insurance and they can run, means they can charge against my insurance. The second is when I went to, when I meet her, she said, you do the glaucoma surgery, glaucoma check. So I did the glaucoma check on their another facility with another doctor. And then I started scheduling my surgery. At that time, when I gone for my lens measurement, that technician has insisted me, you go for retina checkup. I said, no, any doctor has told me to go for retina checkup. So why should you are insisting me? But always they are threatening, means their administrative staff is always threatening that if you don't opt for this test, then we will cancel your surgery. Then I said, okay, then if I want to go for surgery because my both eyes have a cataract. So I told them, okay, I'm ready to go for that one. And there again, they charge me for my copay plus they charge to my insurance. I'm getting the insurance charges from the Anthem, means what all they have charged. So I was a little concerned that why they are charging so much. Then when I started to schedule my surgery, at that time, she said, means I have a cataract surgery for both eyes. And she said, you have to get eye drops. And I have sent to Margaret the eye drops which they have given, sold it to me. And they gave me that eye drops. And then they said, before the surgery, you have to, means they have given me the schedule. Before the surgery and after surgery, you have to apply that eye drops. I said, you give me the prescription. I want to buy it from the pharmacy because that has to be, means it will be kept clean and it will be, means it will not be expired eye drops. So I was insisting them for the prescription, but they said, no, you have to buy that eye drops. Otherwise, we will cancel your surgery. So administrative staff is also insisting on that one. So I bought that one. When I gone for the first surgery, then I started looking for their CEO's contact so I can put this complaint in front of him. So Chris, Christopher Chris spoke to me, and then I started putting the complaints with him. But during that time, they already performed my right eye surgery. So I said, this is what is all happening with me. You are unnecessarily taking my insurance. You are charging, means you are running the test every time when I come for a checkup. Then you are selling me these eye drops and you are not giving me the prescription. So when I went for a post, I finished my right eye surgery and I went for a post cataract checkup. And then they said, okay, doctor never said for that eye drops. And then I started using that one. Then second eye surgery has come. Then I went to, there is one more thing has happened in when I went to Catalina eye surgery, because I don't know why they not do did the surgery in eye associates, but they said you have to go to the Catalina eye surgery center. So I went there and I found that there is that surgery was simple, means within 1 hour, means I can walk out after the surgery. And after my first surgery, I asked even that nurse, I asked do I have to use that eye drops after my surgery? He said, I don't know what about that eye drops. You can use it if they have told you. So there was no coordination. Second is, before my eye surgery, they had given me the instruction what to do before the surgery, but they never gave me the instruction about the post-surgery. So I started searching on the Google and YouTube that what other doctors says, what I have to take care for after my eye surgery, what I have to do. I mean, not Catalina eye surgery or even eye associates has given me any prescription or any instructions for that one. Then I go on for a second eye surgery. When I performed the second eye surgery, then gave me the instruction what to do after my cataract eye surgery. I asked them, why you are giving me now? Because first I have not given any instructions. So that is the second, then even I asked them about the eye drops. They said, you take the means consultation from eye associates. We don't know what eye drops they have suggested. So I went to eye associates, and when I go post cataract surgery checkup with the doctor, then he said, don't use that eye drops. That eye drops is not necessary. I got surprised because after my first eye surgery, that first eye drops got over, so I was looking for a second eye drops. But doctor was saying it is not necessary. That's why I put that point that I'm surprised why they at first misreduced staff is always threatening and giving that drops and asking me to buy that one. So after that, my surgery, when I finished all my checkup, at that time, I started investigating on that one. And I started complaining to Christopher Trace that this is what happening in your clinic and why you're not offered me. Another point I missed here is when before the surgery, I went to the administrator. At that time, I meet Luis and the administrator. And if you see, I have presented one sheet and she marked she has given me the three options. And she marked me one option, which was expensive. And what she said, this surgery means this option, which is you are choosing, that is not covered by the insurance. I asked her that, my insurance provider has told me that my insurance is covering my full, means they cover cataract surgery, there is no issue. Why this is not covered? She not explained me. Even though if you see the charges there are two types of charges, 1,600 for eye associates and 929 for Catalina eye surgery. I asked her, means, is this the final charges or I don't have any option? She said no. So they insisted me to get that one. And then this point means I put it with Mr. Christopher that, okay, they are insisting me to take this option. And I don't want that option. I want an option which is covered by the insurance. Then he started and he said, why don't you tell her at that time, this insurance means your insurance is covering fully. If you would have told us, we could have done it within your insurance. Means he has accepted that within insurance, there was one more option, which is clearly hidden. And it is not mentioned to me at that time. So I got a little more concerned because what I had to do is because of her option, I had to get a loan and pay for this fees. And the option, which is not chose by me, it is forced by her. She said, okay, if you're not choosing, then again, she is threatening that we will not go for a surgery. So when I put all this point with the Christopher Chris, he said, oh, why you are not told her? I said, then this is not fair. Means if you are not telling me at the time of surgery and I already performed my right hand surgery and I was trying to find out your contact and nobody is giving it to me to go for this complaint. So I put the complaint for him. Then when I put the complaint from him, he is not responding. So I escalated this complaint to you to look into this one and why they are providing all these eye drops, which is, I'm not sure. Means is it required by a doctor or any of this one. Second is they are not providing any instructions, means what to do. Means they don't have a coordination between eye associates and Catalina surgery. And they are not means providing any proper instructions. Third is they are forcing some of the unnecessary tests, which is not recommended by the doctor. Miss Lewis is a technician who has forced me the test for retina eye surgery. So these are the three or four points, means I have summarized in my complaint, and that's what I raised this issue with you.
Thank you, AP. I'm going to give Dr. Friedmeier an opportunity now to address the board regarding this complaint.
Hello, thank you. When I had met the patient, they had come in with complaints mainly related to vision, which after my examination, I determined was due to the advanced cataracts in both of the patient's eyes. And I did recommend that he proceed with cataract surgery. When I was looking at the posterior segment of the eye, I saw that he had a large cup to disc ratio, and it looked like in the left eye, he had some thinning of the disc as well. And so I recommended that prior to proceeding with cataract surgery, he get an evaluation for glaucoma. And so that was my recommendation, which it looks like the patient followed. For billing for that examination, I billed for the exam itself and then the refraction that we performed. And we also did fundus photos that day and macula OCT, which is pretty standard at our practice for patients who are proceeding with cataract surgery. But I did not bill for those testings. After I met with the patient, I had not seen them again. So if you have questions about what happened afterwards, I can answer them, but I did not see the patient, or we did not discuss any lens implant recommendations that was done with his cataract surgeon.
Thank you, Dr. Friedmeier. Does this conclude your comments?
Yes.
Thank you. So this will close open discussion, and I'm going to open this up for board discussion. Who would like to start?
This is Dr. Mastoris. I'd like to ask Dr. Friedmeier a couple questions. Is it standard in your practice for the eye drops to be compounded and not sent into a pharmacy separate?
So I would say the majority of our patients do get a compounded drop called Imprimis, which includes their antibiotic, NSAID, and steroid. Although I do see patients that use three separate drops, and usually the choice for that is because either they're allergic to a component of the medication, or some folks maybe have a retina condition that they're already on part of the medication for, and so we split it up. But I think the majority of the patients that I see as post-ops are on Imprimis, typically because it ends up being less expensive than utilizing their insurance.
A little easier for the patient to do three bottles or versus just one bottle too.
Right. We have, I mean, the motivation for it is increase in compliance and decrease in confusion.
Yeah. Another question in your practice, is it?
I'm sorry, Dr. Stars, I just wanted to ask super quick, how much do they charge for that? That's it.
$60.
Okay.
Yeah.
I believe it's either 55 or 60.
Is it standard in your practice for the optometrist to see the patient for post-op care, or do the surgeons see them, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. In this case, I actually did not see the patient for any of the post-ops. It was another doctor in the practice, but both optometrists and ophthalmology will see the patient.
And both of his surgeries were done with the doctors you practice with?
Correct.
Sometimes it's confusing. Okay.
Yeah.
What was my other question? I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Any other comments, Dr. Mastoris, for the board?
Yes. So it was very telling that the form was not signed, that was actually my question. So the form wasn't signed, giving him those options. It was laid out, but not signed by the patient. But it looks like he did have the toric lens implant. I think we don't have the post-op records. So that was another question for Dr. Friedmeier. Is it what percentage of patients in the practice get the upgraded lenses versus standard lens covered by insurance?
That, I mean, I cannot attest to percentage. The form is interesting. So I did not see it in the complaint. I must have looked at the summary complaint and not the full complaint. But while he was talking about it, I went into our system and looked. And we do have a signed by him scanned copy of his approval of the lens selection. And the date that it was scanned in was July, sorry, I had to leave the room I was at, 29th, I believe, was the same date that he had his consult with his surgeon. What's interesting, though, is that the date that the patient wrote next to the signature was August 29th. So I'm assuming he just got the month wrong, but I can...
No, I want to clarify this one.
I'm sorry,
oh, yeah.
Patient AP. Yeah. We can come to you in a minute here, but this is board discussion. And so I'm sorry, but you can't interrupt or speak out. Okay. But we'll try to give you an opportunity in a minute to speak.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. I wasn't sure. Sorry.
So would you say that many patients upgrade, or it's common to see the other way around as well?
I mean, exact percentages. When I'm doing post-ops, I see, I guess I would see more standard lenses than I do necessarily toric or LAL or Lensar.
Okay.
But it's not necessarily uncommon to see a toric IOL.
Okay, thank you. My other kind of just thought is that, you know, the patient had one eye done with the fancy lens, and then he did go back for the second eye and also got the fancy lens. So I think there was a miscommunication and many other things, a lot of drop balls here, maybe not listening to what the patient truly wanted. Those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll make some comments for the board. So some of these comments are for patient AP's benefit and then also comments just for the board. But number one, I heard financial concerns in there. I'll say that I think it's not a violation of the Optometric Practice Act, but it maybe is a little unfriendly towards a patient who has financial concerns, maybe to charge them for the refraction when you know you're not dispensing that and you're referring them for cataract surgery in office. So I'll state that. That's maybe an area where Dr. Friedmeier could make some amends. I'll also say on the optic nerve OCT, Dr. Friedmeier, do you know, did Dr. Kaplan repeat the optic nerve OCT and was it charged again? Or was yours utilized? Is it same practice, same EMR system? Do you have any idea about that?
I did not do an optic nerve OCT the day that I saw the patient.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that in your history.
No, so typically when folks come in for a cataract consult, after it's evident that they will need cataract surgery, our surgeons like us to do a macula OCT and a fundus photo, which I did both of those, but did not bill for. I did not do the RNFL that day because the glaucoma specialist that we work with likes to do their own PanoMap when they see them, okay. If able. The MAC OCT and the fundus photo that I did that day were of really poor quality because of the advanced cataract, so I didn't bill for those that day.
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay, I understand. These were comments. Patient AP, there was something that you wanted to say earlier. Did it get addressed? Right. Do you still want to say that to the board?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah, so when doctor has raised that signing of my form, the first form I not signed, okay. So what has happened when I started giving a complaint to Mr. Craze, at that time they said, okay, you have to sign the form. And so it has been signed forcefully by them because again, they said, we will not do the surgery if you not sign the form. So initially I not signed the form, I not accepted that lens. What is you concluded is correct. And so that's why she see the difference between the dates. I signed after the consultation. That form because I had to go for a surgery.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. So a couple of things I wanted to just say to address things that the patient had said, and then some comments for the board. But number one, with financial concerns, sometimes making sure when you see the doctor, you tell each doctor you see that so that they're aware of it is helpful. I would say that just in instead of emailing it to an administrator who may not communicate that with the doctors, but the doctors do have some leeway here and oftentimes will work with you if they are aware. Also, when we talk about what's covered by insurance or not, something may be covered by insurance, but you may still have a deductible. And so oftentimes there is a deductible that has to be met with cataract surgery. So this may be some of the surprise costs that you're talking about. I don't know, just saying this to be helpful. When you have the type of cataract you had, that posterior subcapsular type cataract, and they use the dilating drops and your vision got better, it's because those cataracts usually are central. And then when you dilate the pupil, all of a sudden you can see around them a little bit. But of course, that is not a treatment for it. And just telling you this so you know it, the surgery center to have to go to a surgery center for cataract surgery is standard. There are separate concerns and there are fees for an anesthesiologist and also the surgery center and staff that you go to. So it is the standard of care to go to an outside surgery center like that. And the fees associated with the surgery center are separate of your physician, your cataract surgeon. The retina exam, we don't have any records from Dr. McCarty, who was your cataract surgeon, or from Dr. Kaplan, who saw you for the glaucoma evaluation. And it could have been one of them that had a retina concern. And that's what necessitated this the visit with the retinologist. Versus it could have also be, and I'm just postulating, but it could also be Dr. McCarty's standard that she has everyone see a retinologist prior to cataract surgery for cataract evaluation, but it should have been communicated with you. But again, that's a different doctor than who we're talking to here. Dr. Friedmeier didn't get to make these decisions. This was Dr. McCarty. So, there's a just to distinguish that. And then also to bring up one other thing, Dr. Friedmeier saw you prior to all of this, but these concerns that you have are associated and under the umbrella of your cataract surgeon. So taking this to that person and to that person's board may be appropriate. Those are my thoughts to the board. Other comments? I'll say also my computer's about to die. I've got to plug it in.
This is Dr. Carpenter. My only other comment would be kind of what you were talking about there at the end, Dr. Moffitt, is that we're reviewing the care. Really, our purview is to review the care that the patient received from Dr. Friedmeier. And just reviewing that, it looks like he received excellent care. I understand the frustrations with the billing or feeling like he was being upcharged or upsold, that he wasn't being listened to. But I don't see that was necessarily the fault of Dr. Friedmeier. So I don't see any violations of the Optometric Care Act.
Thank you. Other comments?
This is Dr. Brown. I agree with what's been said.
Other comments? Ms. Galan?
I don't have anything additional to add.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed.
No comments.
Okay, would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Esperis. I motion that we dismiss this complaint based on no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you.
This is Samuel, second it.
Thank you, further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Friedmeier. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0.
Is there any option for a billing? I can complain it somewhere else or...
So I'm sorry, and I'm not supposed to talk about this at length, but your surgeon is really who is responsible.
Oh, sorry, brother, just a second.
Some of these cases, and so their board is who you might want to take this up with.
Madam President, Margaret, just to let you know, I need to sign off right now, so hopefully I won't be a quorum killer, which I don't think so based on the numbers, but just a courteous heads up. Note for the record that I'm signing off at 10:11 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Okay, so we're gonna move on to agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action on pending renewal license applications. Dr. Richard Bullen, are there any concerns regarding relicensure for Dr. Bullen?
This is Dr. Brown, I have no concerns.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter.
No concerns.
Dr. Mestores.
No concerns.
Ms. Galan.
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to make a motion to approve Dr. Bullen's license?
Dr. Brown, I move that we approve Dr. Bullen's license.
Renewal, please.
Thank you.
Renew.
Renew.
Dr. Mestores, I'll second.
Is there any further discussion? So we have a motion and a second to renew Dr. Bullen's license. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mazdoras?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports. Request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. Any concerns regarding licensure of these applicants, number 1, 2, and 3, pending their fingerprint reports?
Dr. Brown, no concerns.
Go ahead, Dr. Brown, excuse me.
No concerns, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should have preempted that by saying the applications are administratively complete. We are just waiting for the DPS reports, and there was no disclosure on any of the applications.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I also have no concerns. We expect that from you, Margaret, now. That's
okay.
Just
in case.
All right. Dr. Carpenter, any concerns?
No concerns.
Thank you, Dr. Mazdoras.
No concern.
Ms. Galan, concerns?
No concerns.
Thank you. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Brown. I'm not sure how to state it. I move that we accept these applications and approve pending fingerprint reports. Yeah.
Okay. Is
there a second?
Dr. Mazdoras, I'll second.
Thank you. We've had a motion and a second to accept the applications for licensure for applicants 1, 2, and 3. Any further discussion? Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mazdoras?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item I, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of consent agreement and probationary order. Number 1, preceptor report for Dr. Michael Flores related to order number 2024-00254. So we've had a report offered by Dr. Juarez regarding Dr. Michael Flores' monthly or bi-monthly activity. Any concerns regarding this report?
Dr. Mazdoras, I have no concern.
Okay. Dr. Carpenter?
No concerns. I reviewed it and looks good.
Okay. Dr. Brown?
No concerns. Great report.
Thank you. Ms. Galan?
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to offer a motion to accept it? So I will move that we accept Dr. Juarez's preceptor report for Dr. Michael Flores regarding order number 2024-00254. Is there a second?
Dr. Carpenter, I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay. So we'll vote now. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mazdoras?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on designating underserved Arizona communities for optometry students participating in the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education Professional Student Exchange Program.
Madam President, members of the board, can everyone see my screen here?
Yep.
So this is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This is the official website where things like these are determined, the areas of need. So you select your state or territory. Of course, I've chosen Arizona and Coconino County. The request was for Tuba City. And right here is the Navajo Nation Hopi Tribe and the high needs geographic area under this. When you look at the definition of the designation, it is showing that there is a high shortage for health professionals in that area. So the board just needs to look at whether or not they agree that this is a high needs area for optometrists and either accept the request or deny it.
Thank you. Any comments regarding whether this meets the need for high need care? If this, hold on, let me just state that again. If the Hopi and Navajo Nations in Tuba City satisfies the statute that Dr. Wilson is requesting to satisfy his WICHE funding.
This is Dr. Carpenter. I believe that would qualify.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mastoris, I believe it qualifies.
Dr. Brown?
This is Dr. Brown, having been a WICHE student. Is that a new requirement?
I believe it depends on your state, Dr. Brown. I was a WICHE student also.
I was a WICHE student for Arizona.
Yeah.
Is it a requirement now that they work in an underserved area?
I think it depends on your funding, but some states, depending on how many people or where they fund them, right, that they may have a requirement that you serve in that state for so much time or in a certain capacity.
Gotcha. I have no problem with the designation.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Brown, it is actually either low income, high needs, underserved area, or just overall a federally qualified area. So those are all designated through the Health and Human Services. That's helpful. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Galan, any concerns here? Does this meet the high needs statute?
Yeah, I'm listening to what everybody else has to say. I mean, it sounds okay to me to meet it, yeah.
Okay, would someone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Mastoris, and I motion that we accept the Tuba City, Navajo, and Hopi Nation Indian Health Service as a designated underserved community for the WICHE program.
I second. Well said. Any further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second to accept this as a high need area. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item K, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Number one, approved through October 3rd, 2024 through December 4th, 2024. Licensees number A through I are listed there. Agenda item L, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing center for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. Number one, Lollard Academy Test Center, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Any comments regarding accepting this as a site for jurisprudence exam? Dr. Carpenter?
I am in favor, no concerns.
Thank you. Dr. Brown?
No concerns.
Dr. Mastoris?
It's nice to see a Canadian testing site. I have no concerns. All
right. Thank you, Ms. Galan.
No concerns.
I also have no concerns. Would someone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Mastoris. I motion that we accept the Lollard Academy Test Center in Toronto, Canada to be a testing center for our jurisprudence exam.
I'll second. Any further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item M, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding legislation proposed by Representative Contreras to change the time an adverse action remains on the agency website. So it looks like this is a proposed change regarding both non-disciplinary and disciplinary actions posted on the website. Instead of the time frame being 5 years, restricted to 5 years, it lengthens it to 25 years. So we want to decide as a board, do we support it or do we not support this legislation so that Margaret knows how to represent us. So I would say I support it. Other comments? Dr. Carpenter.
Just a question. What's the reasoning or the motive? What's instigating the change?
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Carpenter. This comes and goes. It's a pretty fluid
topic. Governor Ducey actually changed it when he was in office. But prior to that, it was actually, I think, 99 years or something like that. So he changed it down to 5 years. Now it's asked, excuse me, it's being asked to move back up to 25 years. It's really just about the public's right to know and have information. Most boards have a statute regardless of whether or not it's on the website as to how long we retain our public records and complaints are public records. This is actually just about it being posted on the website. So it just depends whose ear you get right by before legislative session. And so Representative Contreras is asking for 25 years to be posted on the website.
Of any disciplinary action. Mm-hmm. And is this across the board, all the licensing committees?
Yes, it's for all the health regulatory boards.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
And this, Dr. Resource, what was the prior time frame?
5 years.
5 years. Oh, wow. Okay.
But she said it went from 99 down to five. Yeah. And now they're saying back to 25.
Yes, this is also, you know, with the website, with technology, things are a little bit different. You know, historically, those of the licensees that were licensed before the internet, you know, people would have to call the board. This is really just about transparency, creating greater access to board actions so that people don't have to, you know, try and contact the board or get or submit a written request for actions if the last 25 years are posted, the last 5 years, whichever is the case. It's just about transparency.
I'll say that I think it matches our career length, you know, 25, 35 years. So it's sort of fair. Maybe 25, Dr. Brown, but it sort of matches our time in career. So I just think it makes it easier for patients to find information if there are concerns about their doctor. I think it's fair to the public.
I have a quick question. Do we currently include letters of concern and advisory letters on the board, on the website?
No.
Have we ever in the past?
Yes. So that existed also during Ducey's tenure and was removed. A lot of people had heartburn over that because letters of concern are non-disciplinary for all of us, for all boards. And excuse me, practitioners didn't think it was fair because it comes up in search engines and people just assume everything by the board is disciplinary. So currently they're not permitted to be on the website.
But they were before Ducey?
Mm-hmm.
And now they will be again, according to this.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a pretty fluid topic slash issue. And it depends what side you're on. You know, practitioners hate it. Regulators love it. We're here to protect the public. So
we're here to protect the public. I believe in transparency. I do appreciate the possibility of misunderstanding letters of concern and advisory letters, but I'm more for transparency.
Well, also, if I may, you know, it's about communication, Dr. Brown, too. So I make it a priority to be very clear when things are posted, you know, on the web. I mean, we can definitely spell it out and, you know, ensure that there's a discerning factor. You know, between the non-disciplinary and the disciplinary actions. A little solace, but at least there's something.
I find 5 years to be excessively short.
It is.
Dr. Mestores, thoughts? Support? For?
I am okay with this, yes.
Okay. All right, so I think Dr. Mestores says she's for it. Dr. Brown, are you for it?
I will not vote no.
Okay. Dr. Carpenter, are you for it or against it?
I'm for it.
Okay. Ms. Galan, for or against?
I'm for this, yes.
Okay. Would someone like to offer? I'm also for it. I think it's fair and I think it's good for the public. Would someone like to offer a motion?
I make a motion that the board take a position for this this bill.
Okay.
In support of the bill, Dr. Brown?
In support of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion of support from the board for Representative Contreras, folder 224, I guess is what we call it for now. And a second, any further discussion? All right, so we'll vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item N, election of officers pursuant to the provisions of ARS-32-1703A. Number one, position of president. Open for board discussion.
This is Dr. Mestores. I motion that, or not sure if I need a motion, for Dr. Moffitt to remain in the position of president of the state board.
Let's open this. Anybody?
Dr. Brown, I'll second it.
Dr. Carpenter?
I'll third it.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Okay. All right. So do we need to make a motion?
We do. Excuse me. Okay. We do, Madam President. Do you accept the nomination for
I'll accept. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'll accept.
Then yes, if we would have a motion in a second other than Dr. Moffitt to elect Dr. Moffitt or continue into the presidency position.
Okay, this is Dr. Mestores. I motion that we elect Dr. Kelly Moffitt to the presidency of the Arizona State Board of Optometry. Do I have any seconds?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second it.
Excellent. Let's vote. Dr. Brown, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
And I, Dr. Mestores, vote aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Dr. Moffitt can vote for herself.
Yeah, she
can
vote for herself. Yeah. And Dr. Moffitt, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, excellent. It actually passed 5-0.
Thank you, everyone.
Also right. Need to
position of vice president.
Dr. Comment. Brown and I nominate Dr. Mestores.
Accept.
Oh, I accept.
This is Dr. Carpenter. I also nominate Dr. Mestores as vice president.
I do as well.
All right, me too. My support in there. Okay, so then do we have a motion to re-elect Dr. Mestores for vice president?
Dr. Brown, I vote or not motion that we re-elect Dr. Mestores as vice president of the board.
Thank you. I'll second. Further discussion? Okay, so we've got a motion and a second to re-elect Dr. Mestores to the Arizona State Board of Optometry. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Great. Agenda item O, Executive Director's Report. Ms. Whalen.
Thank you, Dr. Moffitt. Our fiscal year 25 appropriation is $289,200. As of October 31st, 2024, our beginning cash balance was $261,485 with an end cash balance of $264,948. I'm very happy about that because as you recall, we were swept a significant amount of our fund, but we have quickly built that back up through our renewals and our applications. At this point in time, 33.33% of the fiscal year has elapsed with the board spending at 28.03%. As a reminder, the 85-15 split from 90-10 went into effect September 14th. It's a four-year timeframe, hopefully, until June of 2028. And we'll revert back to 90-10 at that time if a new bill's not passed. What that means is we now give 15% of our revenue to the general fund of the state instead of just 10%. So that aside from the sweeps, that's also gonna start having an impact probably in the next year or so, being able to keep less money. Staff activities and updates. From October 3rd, 2024 to December 4th, 2024, we processed 126 renewal applications. 16 new applications have been received, 9 new licenses have been issued. We have fielded 214 phone calls and 1,825 emails received and answered. Including this board meeting, we have met our mandatory statutory requirement of at least 6 board meetings per year, as this is our last meeting of the calendar year. Are there any future agenda items coming into the new year that we would like to see on the next agenda?
Maybe we should talk about our training, because we have a hours of training we're supposed to be meeting, and maybe just so we can have a discussion about it and see where we are and what that looks like. We all have that clear access, and so I don't know, a conversation about it probably is appropriate.
I have a question. Last year, I was under the understanding of I was more clear on what classes are we supposed to be, just self-selecting classes as we go? I get the emails. Or are there specific ones set up for us? Please help.
Yes, thank you. The board member training is something that I would assign to you. So I'll either sign the board members up through CLEAR, or we can do training through the Attorney General's office. Historically, Ms. Baskin has also given board member training. She is, of course, extremely busy as always. So, you know, if we can get her to give a few hours, I will. But honestly, the other trainings are fine.
Can we, Ms. Whalen, members of the board, if we could delay this, we don't have it as a specific agenda item to discuss. So maybe as Dr. Moffitt has stated, this could be another agenda item, and then maybe all those answers could be, can be addressed and comprehensively answered. And certainly Margaret can send you out emails regarding it.
Perfect. Okay, future agenda item.
Any other future agenda items besides the board member training? No? Okay, thank you. Future board meeting dates. Ms. Baskin is not available. I don't know if anyone is on January 3rd. That would be the first board meeting. It's still a holiday week. I don't know if anyone is traveling or whatnot. But board council is available on Friday, January 17th. It's not our normal meeting day. We don't have to meet in January if the board does not want to. We would meet February 7th as our originally scheduled.
What do you think, Margaret? Do you have a lot of stuff we need to review by January, or do you think February is appropriate?
Right now, I have two open complaints. So I'd say right now, no, it's not imperative that we meet.
Other thoughts? Yeah.
My thought is maybe it seems to be difficult for all our board members to make the longer meetings. And so possibly having more frequent meetings will shorten them. Just a thought.
I agree.
Good point.
Yes. I mean, there's been years, Dr. Brown, where we have had, 8, 10, 12 meetings. And this just was one of those years where we seem to have lots of scheduling problems. So, but I agree, if the board is amenable to it, I think we should meet more frequently. I'm absolutely fine with that, of course. So
you said January the 10th or the 17th?
The 17th it would be.
That's okay for me. How about everybody else?
I can do either of those.
Yeah, it's okay with me for now. Right now,
I'm available on the 3rd or the 17th until 10 a.m. If it's a shorter meeting, it's okay for me.
Okay.
This is Dr. Brown. I'm available on the 3rd. I always block my schedule for the first Friday. Mm-hmm. And I could possibly make the 17th work if needed, but I would have to do some scheduling.
So, Madam President, do you want to kick us off in February, or do you want the January 17th?
I don't want to make it difficult for Dr. Brown's schedule. I understand how hard this is to move patients around, and we have a blocked day. We agree on the first Friday of the month. And so I'm inclined to follow his schedule. So either the 3rd, or if we can't do that for his Baskin schedule, then February.
February 7th. I like that.
well, if my opinion means anything,
Staff will still be taking annual leave at that time for the week of January 3rd. So if at all possible, I would like to meet in February as our first meeting. I mean, we have the state of the state, we have legislation, start of the legislative session. So in the middle of January.
We'll do the 7th then of February, and we'll keep this in mind going forward, but that's just best we can do for this time. Okay.
Okay, so February 7th?
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Okay, that concludes my director's report, Madam President.
Thank you. Okay, so agenda item P, review, discussion, and possible vote on personnel issues pertaining to evaluation of executive director. So we should go into executive session for this, correct?
Yes.
Or do you think we should discuss some of this?
I would ask that the board go into executive session to discuss personnel, specific personnel issues, and then you can come out of executive session and have a motion and a vote on whatever your decision is.
Perfect. Let's go into executive
session. Could you forward the number for executive session again?
I'm just going to put Ms. Becker and Ms. Baskin in the waiting room and whoever that phone number is.
Got it. Thank you.
I'm going to stop the recording for a moment.
And I'm going to turn off my camera and turn off my video and my audio and step away.
Okay. Do we need a motion to go into executive session,
please? You do.
Go into executive session then to review personnel evaluation relating to executive director Margaret
Wade. Dr. Brown, I second.
Thank you. We've had a motion and a second to move into executive session. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Great. Would someone like to make a motion?
We're back in regular session, correct?
Yeah. This so, is Dr. Brown. Go ahead, Dr. Brown.
I may make a motion that we approve the increase in salary for staff as discussed in executive session.
Thank you. I'll second. Mona, I think you're talking, but you're on microphone. It's mute.
We'll need a little bit more for that.
Okay.
I mean, is there a percentage?
Yep. There is
13%.
Was it 13?
13.
I make a motion that we give staff a 13% raise as discussed in executive session.
I second. Further discussion?
Okay. Does the board have any further discussion?
Nope. So we have a motion and a second to increase Margaret Whaling's salary by 13%. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown? I didn't hear you, Dr. Brown.
Sorry, aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, agenda item Q. Call to the public. Any members of the public like to address the board? Okay, agenda item R, motion to adjourn. Would someone like to offer a motion to adjourn?
Dr. Brown, I move we adjourn.
Dr. Mestros, I second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion and a second to adjourn. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. This concludes the December 6, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry.
At
10:51.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, happy holidays to everybody.
Next year.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.